Today's episode of The Mom Game is brought to you by our friends at Gateway Buick GMC at LBJ and Jupiter. I know that buying a car can be stressful, but not at Gateway because their slogan is Gateway's got it. And just what does that mean? Well, it means Gateway's got a wide selection of new Buicks, GMCs, and GM-certified used vehicles, all competitively priced. Gateway's got it. In these busy times, you want a car dealer who makes things easy and convenient. Well, guess what? Gateway's got it. When you log on to gatewaybuickgmc.com, look for the Shop Click Drive button. This allows you to shop from the comfort of your home, and who doesn't want that? In fact, it's as easy as 1, 2, 3. 1, select your vehicle. 2, create your offer. 3, schedule your delivery. And on top of all this, Gateway Buick GMC offers complimentary car washes for life. So when you want a dealer who has it all, Gateway's got it. You can find them online at gatewaybuickgmc.com or shop in person at LBJ and Jupiter. GMC, we are professional grade. Experience the new Buick. I hate Julie Dobbs.
Ashley's doing it too.
Welcome to episode 200 of The Mom Game. I'm Emily Jones. She's Julie Dobbs making fun of me while I'm trying to do a professional ad read for our devoted client, Gateway Buick GMC.
I was playing conductor.
Meanwhile, you're over there with a fucking crayon making fun of me. Now who's funny stuff? I don't know what I was going to say. Anyways,
I was playing conductor. But I knew your melody.
I say it the same way every week. But we've asked Gateway a million times, do you want us to change the read? Do you want to change it up? No, we love it. Keep doing what you're doing, Playboy. I mean, I'm like, okay, fine. So I just keep saying
you're a machine
the same way.
It's very impressive.
I don't know if I'm a machine. But we do have a very special guest in studio with us for episode 200. We just kind of jumped right in, Jesse Holly, with the shit show that we are. This is kind of how we roll here on The Mom Game. Jesse Holly here to talk Cowboys and everything with us today. So thanks for being here. Ran into you at Jared Sandler's charity event. Yes. And you're like, I need to get you on my podcast. I'm like, I need to get you on our podcast. And so here we are, perfect time as we're heading into the playoffs for the Cowboys. Yes. But yeah, I want to talk just with you about just stuff.
That was good.
Life in general.
You were saying you were doing your read, and I kept looking over. I'm like, is there a monitor over there? I'm like, that was good.
Thank you.
That's 200 episodes.
200 episodes. We've had the same copy for 200 episodes. Because people, it's like my party trick. Because when we have guests, they'll be like, damn.
Yeah.
Where's her notes?
Yeah,
where's
the prompter? Looking around, looking for the prompter.
I'm just slaying it on the Gateway read. But yeah, if you've done it 200 times, it's like, you know, it is what it is.
I look over, you have the professional pen and ready to go. And I look over here and tip. I mean, this is the mom's.
Yes.
The mom game.
And she's writing her stuff down with a crayon.
Sometimes all you have in your purse is a crayon.
Yeah.
When you're a working mom.
I know.
And I don't know. I don't have much to write. So I figured
That's not, like, it literally wasn't set out. I looked at the pen. I was like,
I thought you were making fun of my new Oprah readers.
No.
These are my new Oprah
readers.
There's
all kinds of things that.
But it was a crayon.
Make fun of.
Yeah, it was the crayon. It encapsulate just everything that you are.
Here, yeah, I know.
Right?
Yeah,
it's like,
exactly
like
right.
We're fashionable. Yes. We're modern, but we're moms.
Yes.
We're going to get through hook or by crook, through gel pen, or by Crayola, we're going to get this thing
hilarious.
Done.
So yeah. I love it. I'm so glad you noticed it because I didn't even notice it.
I love it.
Amazing.
I never go anywhere without my Crayola. Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about a little bit about you two have a relationship, a prior in a past life. You guys worked together?
Yeah, not too long ago, actually.
Tell me.
He filled in on the freak.
Yeah, I was going to say, don't tell him about our past relationship.
I didn't tell her about it.
Sordid history between you two.
I don't know how she knew.
Goodness.
He's a professional. You heard that, Reed? Yeah, we worked together at the Jeff Kavanaugh.
The freak.
Freak.
Whoop. Bleep, okay, you're not the only one who does that.
Well, he used to be.
I used to be there. That's our connection. At the Freak, Jeff Kavanaugh is one of my really, really, really good friends, like a brother of mine, and I've jumped on the show, and I love it. I love it.
Yeah, one time he filled in for me, and then another time he filled in for Mike Reiner. Yes. So Jeff and Jesse and I got to do a show together at Pluckers.
Yeah. One of these days they'll make the budget to where I'm just a part of the show.
Yes.
One day.
Yeah.
We are waiting. We're definitely waiting for that moment.
Okay, so tell us a little bit about your background. Where'd you grow up? Where'd you go to school? I mean, you still look like you're in playing shape.
Thank you. All vanity.
Just kind of, is it? Is it?
All vanity.
Okay, there's nothing wrong with that.
No, 100%.
Okay.
That is purposeful.
Okay.
Like, I can't go and play anymore, but.
Right.
Here is the conceited part of Jesse Holly, and we'll get to where I'm from. But I never want anyone to see a picture of me, see a podcast of me, and go, he finally fell off.
Yeah.
Look at him.
Okay.
Fat, out of shape. Remember when?
Yeah.
No.
Okay, so it's funny you bring that up. So I had this conversation with my mom. We were all together over Christmas. And my mom, and I love my mom. She's a little quirky. or a lot.
Yeah.
God bless. She comments on like.
And we love her though.
Like she'll get on, like when Trump was in office, she would get on the White House Facebook page and like comment like, that his hair looks like a mop. That got, you know, dipped in Sunkist. It was like, oh my God, mom, like, do we have to comment on the White House Facebook page?
You go right to the source.
Seriously. But she used to tell me, and I think it gave me a little bit of a complex when I was younger, because all the women in my family are pretty small. Like, I'm the tallest one. And she would always tell me, you're the biggest girl in our family. And I'm like, I'm also the youngest. This is not an endearing thing for you to tell me at this point in my life. And then now she'll tell me, and she'll be like, you know, you're not always going to look like this. And I'm like, listen, bitch, like, maybe I will. And I feel like it's shit like that.
Like,
that motivates
she says that to you now.
Yes. And I'm like, well, she was like, well, I mean, I remember when I was like, well, I'm 46 and I'm still doing okay.
Yeah.
And if I keep doing what I'm doing are things, and she's like, well, it's called gravity. And I'm like, well, these things aren't going anywhere because they are not subject to gravity. Thank you very much. Everything else I've got to work on. So, but I'm like that kind of, there's a little bit of a motivating factor in me. And then also too, like when I think about like New Year's resolutions and all that kind of stuff, like I just want to keep doing what I'm doing. You know, I just want to keep, you know, and once you, and if you're at that point, like where you are and where, when you were playing and like, and you just keep where you're at.
I just keep going.
Yeah.
I got a little salt and pepper in my beard. I can't help it. I refuse to like color it.
Yeah.
I refuse to. The ladies think it's kind of hot. So
no doubt.
I'm not coloring it. So, but other everything else.
Yeah.
I'm still kind of like
holding on.
I'm holding on.
I married a silver fox and I love his gray hair.
I'm holding on.
Like I love it. It's gotten significantly grayer since we got married. But
same. Same.
But I'm not letting that one go because you can see mine poking through and I set an appointment with Miss Brittany for next Wednesday. So I mean we're good. So well you look great.
Thank you. And you I mean this is an all female run crew. I love it. All of you look fantastic.
Yeah, thank you.
I love what's going on here.
I know.
The ambiance is great. It feels warm in here and just cozy. We had to, I'll be, you know, completely candid. We had to change seats.
Yes.
Naturally, though, this is not like
big booty.
Time. I'm big bootied.
Yeah.
Right? Like I'm thick. You know what I mean? I'm cute in the face, thin in the waist, but I'm fat in the, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know what I mean? Like
someone who had the nickname Dishpan Ass in high school, I'm envious.
So you're just flat.
Dishpan Ass. I was like, between that and mosquito bites, like I've got lots of issues. Mosquito bites.
Don't forget gorilla.
You know, and gorilla, because I was hairy. Like, I'm very scarred, obviously.
I think my high school experience was a lot better than yours.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Have it better than yours.
Look at me now. I got fake boobs and relatively
on one today. What are you bringing out of her? She's
I don't know. I don't
and
know.
We're not even drinking.
I know. We're not.
But yeah, so I'm from Roselle, New Jersey.
Okay.
I'm a Yankee, right? I'm the middle of three boys. I have an older brother and a younger brother. We're all Jay Hollies.
Okay.
It's always interesting, like if you look at the dynamics of my family. We are same mom, same dad. We're completely different.
Yeah.
We're not only completely different, we look alike in the face. I'm 6'3", 225-ish pounds, 30-ish. My oldest brother's probably about 5'7".
Oh, wow.
Really?
155 pounds, soaking wet. My youngest brother's probably about 5'9"-ish, about 170. And so we always make the joke. I'm like, Mom, seriously.
Yeah.
Did the milkman stop by? Like, I'm to a point in time now, and there, I'm probably telling too much. There is this one guy. This is a true story. There's this one guy. This is a couple years ago. I think I'm maybe about 9 years ago. I'm home in New Jersey. Right, about 9 years ago, I just got finished playing. I'm retired, and I'm like, all right, I'm going to go home for Thanksgiving because I don't get Thanksgivings with my family. Haven't had it in a long time. And I'm at the high school in New Jersey. We play your rival school. You play on Thanksgiving.
Okay. That's like Thanksgiving Day?
Thanksgiving morning.
Wow.
You play a high school football game Thanksgiving morning. And so I'm standing there on the sidelines of this game, and this guy walks up to me. And he says to me, he goes, hey, man, when you get a second, I'd like to talk to you. And I go, okay, right? Like, because when I go home, you both know this. Like, you have people come up to you, and they want you to invest in stuff and be a part of this and be a part of that. So I'm just like, okay. I'm like, but the game's on. Like, not right now.
Right.
At halftime. I'll see you at halftime. So halftime comes, and I see him on the other side of the fence. So I kind of go around. And I say, what's up, man? He said, you know, I just need about 10 minutes of your time. And I'm just like, I'm a smart guy. So I'm like, all right, well, now you have 9:30. Like, you know, like
keep
like,
it moving.
Like, let's go, you know?
I like that.
And so he began to tell me, he goes, you know, you don't know me. And, you know, I grew up with your mom and dad and da 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 da. He's going on, no. He was like, you know, I think I may be your father.
No. Oh, shit.
True story.
No.
And I look at him and I smile and I go, thanks, bro. I appreciate you. Happy Thanksgiving. Going about your day.
Yeah.
Right? I'm like, let's just.
Keep okay, wait. Are your parents still together?
No. My dad died when I was in high school.
Oh, okay.
Right? Sorry. But if I showed you a picture of my dad, like all of this, like my smile, my note, like it looks like him.
Okay.
Right? And everything else is my mom. Like literally. And my brothers are, we're the same way. Like if you just took our mouths, we all look the same. And we look like our father. Mm-hmm. And so I go back home where my mom is cooking Thanksgiving dinner after the game. And I'm like, Ma, got a question. And so this guy, she's like,
got a question.
What? No. Well.
Oh, dear.
I'm like, don't play. She's like, no, he's not your dad. But we did around the time, but he's not your father. I promise you he's not your father.
Oh.
And then as of recently, my brother's in the politics. My oldest brother, he's a mayor. He's a politician. He's all that kind of, he's into that stuff. And so I went home this past summer. They had some elections that were coming up, and I went to support him. And I'm at the after party while they're doing the numbers and counting all the numbers. The same guy walks up to me again. And I actually forgot exactly who he was. And again, I'm at this event, and whenever I come home, people always want to talk about something, whether it's the Cowboys or whether it's this, whether it's
right.
that. And so I try to be gracious enough to give everyone time. And I'm like, boy, I didn't come home to talk about. That's what I do for a living. I know you get that.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Like, we don't want to talk about the Rangers today.
Right. Yeah.
Not today.
Yeah.
And so, but I try to be gracious, and I try to be, you know, just humble enough to go, we'll have the conversation, right? And so a guy kind of like pulls my arm, and he pulls me to the side and says, hey, man, you got a minute? And he starts the story off with, you know, I was on this mission trip in Africa and was revealing some things to me, and the Lord told me to really approach this situation. And he goes, you know, I really think that I'm your dad. And I go, yeah, the Lord didn't tell me that. I'm just like, and I said, please stop with this.
Yeah.
I'm the like, same dude.
Same guy.
Not another.
Yeah, okay. Same guy. I'm like, my guy, please. I don't want to make a scene, but you're literally giving me no choice. Right? And it's funny, my little brother can see me from a distance, and he can see, because now I'm like, brother, just go ahead. I'm like, man, just go. Just please just go. Because I don't want to make a scene, but you're aggravating me. But please just go. And so my little brother can see me from a distance.
He can tell something's up.
He can tell something up. Now, my oldest brother is the talker. I'm a talker as well. But
he's
the oldest one. I'm more kind of level-headed, right? My little brother is the pit bull. So now, like, he sees me flustered. And, like, now I can see him coming. And
did he know who the dude was?
No.
Okay.
all he can see is my, he can see this guy talking to me and my face get flustered. And I kind of like, I'm like, come on, let's just. And so now he's coming to my defense because he's like, no, I'll handle this. And as I'm trying to shoo this guy away, I see him coming. I'm like, he's going to make a scene. Like, my little brother's going to make a scene. And so he starts walking away and my brother comes up and I'm just like, he's like, man, what's up? You all right? You good? You? I'm like, it's fine. It's cool. We're good. We're good. I'm like, let's just hope he never comes back again. So, yeah, I mean.
And he never has come back?
Not yet. Not yet. Maybe he'll tweet me or something and say, I really think I'm
crazy. I don't, yeah. And so ballsy to just like up to you like that.
Twice.
Yeah.
I was like, bro, you're not my father. Yeah. What I should have said to him, I was like, well, if you are my father.
You've sucked.
I need the 20 plus years you missed of child support. Like, right. Run that back to me. That's what I should have said. I said, you know what? You are my dad. Yeah. Can I get a check?
Yeah.
That's what I should have said.
Back child support.
Yeah, he probably would have ran away. But yeah, it's always.
Oh, wow. That's crazy.
Yeah, but.
So grew up in New Jersey.
Grew up in New Jersey. Middle of three boys. I was actually raised by my grandmother. My grandmother raised me. And my brothers, and believe it or not, as someone who's played in the National Football League, football wasn't my first love. Basketball was my first love. Loved basketball, and I was terrible in football.
At football?
Oh, I was a scrub. Like, excuse my French. Like, my coach used to have a position called ass back. You ever heard of that?
Yes.
Yeah, you ever heard of that?
No.
Yeah, it's when you're not really good and you keep running up to the coach saying, "Coach, put me in," and he says, "Get your ass back." So that was me. That was my position. I was terrible.
They wouldn't even play you.
No, I got the minimum. Like in Little League, you had like a minimum. Like each player had to play like 8 plays.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got that quick, and they were like, "You're done with you."
Oh man,
I was horrible. I was horrible. Troublemaker though. I got in a lot of trouble. I was willing to get in trouble, but. Yeah, basketball was my first love, and then football kind of just, it found me, and we found each other. Eventually, I got really good at it, and went to University of North Carolina, played 2 sports there, won a national championship in basketball, played 4 years of football, was a starter for 3.5 of those years, graduated with a degree, and went to the National Football League, was in Cincinnati, then got released and ended up in Canada. At CFL, you talk about
we're in Canada,
British Columbia.
Yeah,
I was with the BC Lions.
BC Lions. Yeah, they're pretty good.
They are. They were good then.
The people up in Canada love them.
No, I love Canada.
Yeah.
Have you guys been to Canada?
Well, not much. No. I mean, Toronto when we play the Blue Jays, but really, I've heard.
Place.
So especially like Vancouver? Where?
Yes. Uh-huh. Yes.
Is it where Kelly's from? Is like.
Yeah, he's amazing. From Vancouver Island. Yeah. My husband is.
I've some of the most beautiful humans I've ever seen in my life.
Like physically? Are in Canada,
physically.
Really?
Men, women, some
just
of the most.
Just pretty people.
Just because the combinations are insane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, cause you're,
much more of a melting pot.
Oh my God. You'll have someone who's like, oh yeah, my mom's French, but my dad's Korean. And
yeah.
Then, like you'll have a Jamaican with someone who's come over from somewhere else. And I mean, like, it's just some,
yeah.
And you look and you're like, God, you're beautiful.
Yeah.
Like some of the most beautiful people. I loved it there. I hated CFL football.
Yeah.
Because I equated it to when you go to the NFL first, and that to me is that's Nick and Sam's. That's that high quality level of that's 5-star. That's your double eagle. That's all that kind of good stuff. And then you go to the CFL at that time. I'm sure it's changed. This is way back when. That's like Chili's,
yeah.
Right? And it's like it's edible, right?
But yeah.
I don't.
It's no Nick and Sam's.
I don't want that steak.
Yeah.
I want the dry aged tomahawk that's been cooked by a chef. I don't want the.
Yeah, you're used to a certain thing.
Yeah, and so until then, and of course from there, all hell broke loose. Life got real bad. Life got real bad for me, and we'll probably get into that.
Yeah.
What does that
entail?
Yeah,
all hell breaking loose.
Yeah, that's losing everything. That's literally becoming homeless.
Wow.
That's literally becoming homeless. That's going from the NFL.
How did you lose everything?
Young and dumb.
Okay.
Young and
bad
dumb.
Choices.
Oh, extremely bad choices.
Extremely bad choices. Drugs, alcohol?
No, I've never done a drug.
Okay.
I don't drink alcohol.
I didn't think you did drink
alcohol. No,
no. Gambling?
No, no. Just spending. Just spending.
Look at me. I'm like, drugs, drinking, gambling. I've been there on all fronts.
She's being all serious about
it. We can identify.
Did you have a gambling problem?
I mean, I did. I had a gambling problem. Got it. I racked up some debt.
No, it was, and I tell people, and I try to tell young athletes this all the time. I made dumb decisions according to what I thought was right from the environment that I grew up in.
Yeah.
When you come from nothing, like my grandmother raised three boys on less than $30,000 a year. We didn't have anything. So, and my environment wasn't much outside of New Jersey. So everything that I saw there was what was the foundation of what life was supposed to be for me.
Sure.
And so when you got money, you did certain things. When you had money, you bought certain cars, you bought certain clothes. And so those are the things that you equated with wealth. Those are the things that you thought, when I got a piece of change, that I have to go and do X, Y, and Z, and da, 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 da. And not thinking that, because, you know, when you get in the league, when I got to the league, you got to remember, by the time I got to the league, I had never been told in my life up to that point that I wasn't good enough to be on a team. Right? Like once I really got good at what I was doing,
sure,
everybody wanted me. I was first team this. I was the first kid picked at the playground when I got, you know.
Yeah.
So I never thought it was going to end.
Yeah.
I thought that these checks will always come because I'm that good. And you learn the business on the run. And unfortunately for me, I didn't have enough money stored up to learn the business and rebound.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. I learned the business. And I learned the hard way from my decisions. And people were like, oh, were you broke, like famous broke? Like, no, I mean broke where like I would call the back of my debit card and it'd be like, you have $17.33 type broke. And this is 2008. Okay. So this is the recession.
So how long were you in the league?
So 1 year.
Okay. And then go to Canada.
And I go to Canada. And then everything's gone.
And then everything's gone.
So I go to Canada and I don't even do a full season in Canada. This is like, so my Canada experience was this. I get to Canada. There's a receiver in Canada who wants a pay raise. Mm-hmm. And rightfully so. Like he's a Hall of Famer. His name is G. Roy Simon. You can look him up. And so they come to me after I've already agreed to my contract. They say, hey, would you take a pay cut this year? And we'll
Get you next year.
Get you next year. And I'm like, well, I'm street sense smart enough to know that's not how it works. Because I'll say yes this year, and then next year come and you'll cut me and I'm gone. And so they made me sit in my room. Like, well, don't come to practice. And I sat in my room for like 4 or 5 days not knowing what was going to happen. And they released me. they released me and dropped me off at a bus station in the middle of Canada. I have no clue where I'm at. It was a little small tackle box shop in the middle of nowhere. I could be tripping, but I swore I saw wolves off in the distance. Like, I'm telling you, like, I know I saw a wolf.
Yeah,
I believe you.
I know, because they dropped me off. Yeah, they dropped me off early in the morning. I get on a bus, and they give me a bus ticket. I get on a bus. I have to bus from Canada to Seattle. So that's where my flight was at in Seattle. So they didn't even fly me out of Canada. I had to bus to
they were
Seattle.
Trying to use Southwest points.
I don't know what it was. It was the worst. I don't even like it was a couple hours to Seattle. And then you get to, once you get to the border, they have to take you, everyone off, all the luggage off. So that's another like 2 hours where you're having to wait there. Then I finally get to Seattle. I'm on a red eye from Seattle to Phoenix. I went from Seattle to Phoenix, Phoenix to Chicago, Chicago to Dulles, Dulles to RDU, back to North Carolina where I came from.
Jeez, five connections.
I spent 27 hours in the airport, like just
getting from place to place.
Oh, it was the absolute worst. And I said, I'll never go back there again. But I get back to Durham. I have nowhere to live. I have very little money. Luckily, I have a friend of the family that is staying in Durham, and she lets me sleep on the futon She's like an aunt. She let me sleep on the futon and in her back room in exchange that I would like watch her son when she went out of town and stuff like that. She had a small poodle named Sal. I hated this dog and this dog hated me. And if I opened the door and Sal came in, he would jump up on the futon and pee on my blanket every single time.
So, okay, he has pet peeing on things problems.
Yeah. Every single time this dog would do this. And I'm telling you, he hated me and I hated him. So I would have to like sneak out of the room and sneak back in the room because so he didn't run in there. I couldn't find a job. Couldn't find a job anywhere. I ended up working as a security guard at Allied Barton Security Company, the third shift. And the determination for me never stopped because I would work from 11 at night to 7 in the morning. And then I would train in this run down, I mean, shoebox of a weight gym. I mean, like they had like duct tape on them. It was bad, but it cost like $10 a month for your membership. And I would train with my roommate, my former college roommate. We would train every day from 7:30 to 9:30. And then I would go to work at T-Mobile. I was working at a T-Mobile.
When did you sleep?
There wasn't much sleep. There was just constantly working because I had a car that I had bought when I had first gotten to the league. Instead of buying the car, I leased the car. I had no credit, right? I had a co-sign. So I had this enormous car payment that I had to pay for. So I had to work to make sure that this car didn't get repoed. But I was so broke, I couldn't pay insurance. Like, I barely kept gas in it. Like,
what kind of car was it?
At that time, it was a 645.
What is that?
Benz. Beamer. 645.
Oh, okay.
Beamer. And, you know, it cost me an arm and a leg to have it, you know. But
yeah, just to keep it.
It was dumb. And from there is where Fourth and Long, that's where that was birthed.
Yeah.
From that
and
situation.
And that, I watched that show.
Yeah,
did you for me? I did. Yeah, well, I mean, you had a great story.
Don't lie.
I don't remember anything.
All right.
You won the damn thing.
Yeah, that's all that matters. And so working at this security place, I hated it. Like, even thinking about it now, I laugh because I hate it. I hate it myself. Mm. I hated it. One of the hardest parts of that time period for me was when I used to get dressed. Sal, the dog, used to bite the ankles of my pants legs.
Sal was
a menace. I was so glad when he died. No, I shouldn't say that. Sorry, PETA. PETA. But one of the moments that I every night, and I hated it to my core, was I would have to stand in that mirror, and we had these clip-on ties that you had to wear. Because if you're a security officer, they don't let you wear ties because it's a choking hazard.
Oh.
Right. Police officers don't wear ties. They wear clip-ons. It's a choking hazard.
Who knew? I never knew that.
You learn something new every day.
Every day.
From a security guard.
There we go.
And so I would have to clip that tie on. And it was just I don't even know how to explain it, but it was the most demoralizing feeling every single night to just hear that snap of that clip-on tie. And I looked myself in the mirror and I literally hated the person that I saw.
Aww.
And I was like,
this is not the plans for myself.
It's not the plan, bro. Like, you were just 2 years ago, you were in the league. And now you're clipping on a fake tie to go do a security job? What the entire
fuck? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that was the thing. And what was a changing moment, and I can actually relate that to today because I still do it to this day. I had a friend of mine who, when you're in moments of despair, like I'm a believer in Jesus Christ, right? Like, that's just what it is.
Same.
When you're in these moments of despair, like you're reaching, you're like, I'm reaching for something. And I remember there was this moment in time. It was like 3:30 in the morning. And I'm walking the grounds if you've ever been to the Durham Bulls ballpark in Durham, North Carolina, right? If you've ever been to the Durham, right across the street is what they call Tobacco Road Warehouse type thing. And what it is, it's an old tobacco factory that they've gutted, but it's like a historical landmark. So they've gutted it and then like kept the foundation and the surrounding outer parts of it, and then built different things on the inside. And so I was securing all of the things that were happening inside there. I don't know how much I was securing it, because if anything happened, I wasn't stopping anybody from doing anything. But I had a whistle.
Oh.
I had a whistle and I had a flashlight. And so it's like 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning, and I'm in the middle of the courtyard. And I remember just like getting down on my hands and knees and like looking up to the heavens. And I'm like, what do you want from me? Mm-hmm. Talking to God. Like, what do you want from me? Screaming this out now, by myself, screaming this out to the heavens. What do you want from me? And I remember like hearing this voice that just said, you. I just want you. And I was just like, I don't have anything left. I don't have fame. I don't have celebrity. I don't have fortune. I don't have friends. I don't have anywhere to live. Like, I have nothing. And shortly after that, I talked to one of my friends and he goes, hey, listen, the new year is coming. And he's like, you know, we do this fast at my church. Like, maybe you should fast with us because you're praying and believing. And I'm like, all right, what is fasting? Like, explain to me what that is. And he explains to me what it is. And I'm like, so he's like telling me what they're doing. And I'm like, there is no way I'm doing that. I'm like, no way. And so he's like, bro, he says, right now you're stuck. He's like, if you want something, he said, if you want something you've never had, you have to be willing to do something you've never done. And I was like, he's right. And so I begin to do this fast. And at that time, the fast was, and I said I can still contribute it to today's story, I still do it today. I'm literally in the middle of it now. The first 7 days mm-hmm. of the year is just water.
What?
Just water.
You are a big water guy.
Just water. I am a huge water guy. Huge yes, water guy. I am. First 7 days is just water.
Okay.
10th.
Mm-hmm. Right? Then the next 7 days is juice, like pressed juice or, you know, smoothies, stuff like that. Just juice and water for the next 7 days. And then you go juice for third 7 days is juice, water, and then you can add fruits and vegetables with only like salt and pepper and a teaspoon of like dressing. And then you end out the end of it. You can add fish to it. And I've done this since 2009.
Seriously?
Yeah. And like, and even this
dry year, January, it was
and,
hard.
And this year I've kind of altered it a little bit because I'm really truly believing something great for me in 2024. So I've already passed the 7 days of just water. And so now I'm on juice and water, but I decided that I'm going to do juice for the rest of the month. I'm going to juice for the rest of the month of January.
No food?
No food.
Are you working out?
No working out. No working out.
Are you hungry?
Very. Very.
Do you want a cracker? Wait, I have a question for you.
Yes.
Can I ask him something?
Yeah.
So when you were starting to do that, they say when people are fasting, they typically start feeling a little bit more connected.
Mm-hmm.
So did you feel that connection? And yeah. as well, like, is there a specific religion that you're doing that this is a part of, or a denomination within Christianity?
Yeah. So it's yes, to answer your question, and you do have a clearer connection, because in replacement of where you would have breakfast, lunch, and dinner, you read your word or you pray, or you spend time doing something spiritually. And so I still do that. Even if I'm driving somewhere, I'm just listening to music, just filling my spirit up. I'm praying. I'm just having a moment of prayer. And what's really good about it, because every time I get hungry, I pray. And so it builds up my pray without ceasing, yeah. right? My muscle memory for that. Because every time I get hungry, I just pray. 30 seconds, 15 seconds, I just pray. And so now you it becomes such rhythmic and such muscle memory for you that anytime something happens in your life, just pray. And so it restarts that for me for the year. And there is a connection. There is a connection that I feel with it. And during this time, so I start the fast. My friend says, start the fast. I do the fast. And I'm like 6 days into it and I'm struggling, but my phone rings. And my phone rings and it's a guy by the name of Kevin Best. And KB was the PR person at the University of North Carolina. Now I'm 2 years graduated. I'm 2 years removed from being there. Why is Kevin Best calling me? So I answer the phone. I'm saying, hey, KB, what's up? He says, hey, man, what's going on, man? Didn't know if this is still your number, yada, 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 but just wanted to holler at you. So I'm like, okay. He said, someone called me and they're trying to do this show. Don't know much about it. Can't tell you much about it. But they reached out to me and they said, do you know anyone who has the ability to play the game on Sunday, football, but also be in front of a camera?
Oh.
And he said, I thought about you. So I gave them your name and your number, and I'm calling you to let you know that I did that. So be on the lookout from a call that you may not recognize. Okay. Like, cool. Fine. A couple days later, I get a call from one of the producers. Oddly enough, his name is Jesse. Oddly enough, we share the same birthday. Didn't find this stuff out until afterwards, but his name is Jesse, and we share the same birthday. And so he calls and he says, hey, man, we're doing this show. Can't tell you much about it, but you were highly recommended by Kevin, so I wanted to give you a call. Da, 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 da. He says, I'm going to fax you, right? This is the time that we're in.
Fax.
Yeah, we're in fax stages. This is before you can scan and do all that kind of stuff. He said, I'm going to fax you this application. Send it back to me as soon as you possibly can. He does. I fill it out. I send it back. A couple, maybe a week or two goes by, and he says that he calls me back and he says, hey, we're doing auditions for this show. I'm like, what show? He goes, it's going to be a football-based show. Can't really tell you much about it, but we're going to do auditions in these five cities. Can you get to one? Orlando, Ohio, Dallas, and there are two in California. And so I'm like, yeah, I'll be in Orlando. And he's like, cool, we'll put you down. Here's the dates, here's where we have to meet, yada, yada, yada. I hang up and I have no way to get to Orlando.
Yeah.
I have no money. I have zero money. Quick backstory, this is how broke I was. I told you, I had the car. I didn't pay insurance. I was driving to work one night, got pulled over by the police. The lady cop said, you don't have insurance. Your car is not even registered. And she's like, we should tow it. But I'm like, I live right there. She goes, we're going to turn this car around. You're going to take it back. You're going to park it. I'm going to take your license plates. When you get your insurance or registrations, bring it back. Come see me. I'll give you your plates back. She takes my plates. I steal plates off another car in the apartment complex parking lot. I steal one front plate off and put it on my back plate. So I'm driving around in a car with plates that do not belong to me. So now I'm thinking, because people are going to say, why you didn't drive to Orlando? That's why I didn't drive to Orlando.
Right. Yeah.
I don't have plates to this car. And I'm like, the last place I want to be is you going through Alabama or Georgia somewhere and you get pulled over by one of those state troopers and you like, wait, this car don't match those plates.
Yeah.
Those plates don't match that car. I'm in the world of trouble.
You got more problems.
I'm in the world of trouble. I can't afford a bus ticket. I can't afford a plane ticket. I can't afford anything. But I told him I'm coming. Right? And so literally the next morning, maybe two mornings after that, I get a call from my godmother, just a wellness check. Haven't heard from you in a while. How's everything going? Just wanted to hear your voice. We chit-chat. We talk about 30 minutes. As we're ending the call, she says, do you need to go anywhere? And I said, what do you mean? She says, well, I had a plane ticket to go to Alabama, where she was from. She goes, but Dylan, her son, got sick. And she says, I didn't go. And the airlines called me and told me that I have to use this ticket or lose this ticket. This is before plane insurance, right?
Right.
She goes, if you need to go somewhere, I can probably get it changed over in your name and probably, you know, whatever the cost is, you need to go somewhere, you want to go somewhere. I'm like, I need to get to Orlando. She said, okay. So she calls and she's like, it's $100 to change it, but don't worry about it. Give it to me later. So I went from not having a ticket to Orlando to having a plane ticket in Orlando. And I have to be there for 2 days. I have nowhere to stay. So I'm thinking to myself, all right, maybe I'll just sleep in the airport.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, I'll just sleep in the airport. And then it dawned on me. My fifth grade teacher, Miss Ronnie DeNoia, who at one point in time dated my grandmother's brother.
Okay.
Right? So one of my great uncle. Lived in Orlando, and all throughout college, she would always ask if I wanted to come to Orlando. And I thought to myself, one, I couldn't because I'm playing an NCAA tournament during spring break. Secondly, who wants to go to Orlando and spend time with an old person? And I'm in college. Nobody wants to do that. Nobody. So I was like, nah, I'm good. But now I pull out that card and I call her. And I said, "Ms. DeNoia, are you still in Orlando?" She says, "Yes, I am." And I said, "Well, I'm coming to Orlando. If I can, I would love to, stay with you for 2 days." She says, "Okay, well, where do you need to go?" And I give her the address. She goes, "Really?" I go, "Yeah." She says, "This is right around the corner from my house."
Oh, nice.
She goes, "I drive by this location every single day." She goes, "You can walk there in about 10, 15 minutes if you want to, or I can drop you off." So I go from not having anywhere to stay and no plane ticket to not only having a plane ticket now, having somewhere to stay that is literally minutes from where I need to be.
It's all coming together.
It's all coming together. I go, I do the audition. The producer who talked to me, Jesse, so you do an on-camera audition and then you do an on-field audition.
Mm-hmm.
So after I do my on-camera audition, he goes, "I'm putting a star by your name. Don't worry about coming tomorrow." So I'm like, "Well, what does that mean?" He goes, "Well, each one of us are located in a different city and we all come back to LA and we sit at the table and we say, these are the guys that we like. You're one of the guys that I like." And he's like, "I checked your credentials. You don't need to do the field stuff. You're good enough to do the field stuff." So I said, "Okay." So I spent the day with Ms. DeNoia, right? Like, mm-hmm. She finally got her day with me.
There you go.
And then I go back home. They're like, "Don't call us. We'll call you."
She finally got her day with
me. And so then I go back and eventually, it comes out. They're like, "Hey, you've been selected one of the 50 that's going to go to California for another set of rounds of whatever this thing." I'm like, "All right." So I told him, "I pump faked Orlando. I can't make it. I got this Hail Mary is not going to happen for me twice to California." He said, "Don't worry about the 50 that we're bringing to California. We're taking care of everything. Flights, room and board,
nice.
And you'll get $75 a day in per diem." But I had a job. I was the third shift supervisor at the security company.
Yeah.
And I had to be there for a week, 7 days. That was per the company, the studio. And so I go ask my boss, and he's like, "Hell no." He's like old military dude named Mr. Quarterman. He died. And he did die. He really did die. And I wasn't sad that he died because he was so mean to me.
Aww.
He was terribly mean to me.
Yeah.
He was a mean old man. But he was former military. He was like, no. And what I ended up doing was, I was supervisor, I had Fridays and Saturdays off. So I got everyone to sign off of giving me their days off during the week in exchange for my Fridays and Saturdays off in consecutive weeks. So I gave you this week, I'll take,
Yeah.
And I had a full week off. And people signed off on it. Told me no. Fast forward, I had a girl that I was dating. And before I had to really make a decision, she was like, "Hey, come see me before you go to work." I went to see her. She gave me a manila envelope. She said, "Before you go talk to Mr. Quarterman in the morning, open this envelope." And so I go and talk to Mr. Quarterman. This is like a couple of weeks had gone by. Now it's time for me to get ready to go to California. He still told me no. So I set up a meeting with him one last time. And we go to meet in the morning, and I ask him again. He tells me no, get the hell out of his office.
And in that manila envelope, your girlfriend had put pictures of him with a goat.
I wish.
Okay.
I wish.
That was bribery.
But she wrote a resignation letter.
Okay. I like it.
She wrote a resignation letter and put on a sticky note, "Trust God."
Oh, I like that.
And I didn't.
She was ballsy.
I didn't open it beforehand. So after he told me no, and I'm sitting there, I'm like, "Well, what am I going to do now?" I look down, I'm like, "Oh, it's the envelope." And I'm opening it while he's at his, and I'm like, "Oh, she really?" And I just put it on his desk and I walked out.
Nice.
And I was like, "I don't know what the heck did I just do. I don't have a job. I don't have any money. I don't know what this show was going to be. It had got canceled and brought back." And I was like, I don't know. But I'm like, "All right, I'm trusting." Right? So I go through the fast and I'm just like, and I go and do the audition in California, and I get selected to be one of the 12 of the show. And we come here in the Cotton Bowl, and we're in the Cotton Bowl. We live inside the Cotton Bowl.
I remember
we
that.
We live inside the Cotton Bowl. I'm there for 2.5 months. I win the show. And after the show, Jesse, the producer, who I met on the phone in Orlando, he says, "I don't think you understand what you just did." He said, "The application that you faxed into us," he said, "we had over 100,000 of those sent in." He said, "Auditioning out of the 5 cities, we had over 22,000 people audition."
Wow.
He said, "Then it was 50 of you. Out of the 50, there was 12. Out of the 12, there were 1. And that was me."
Yeah.
And then I had to get to training camp, which Jason Garrett never gave me a playbook at all. I had to learn, like, me and God rest Joe Avezzano, I love Coach Joe Avezzano. We snuck in the Valley Ranch, and we were in this little room, and we watched recorded meetings of install. And that's how I had some sort of semblance of what the offense was going to be to kind of give me something to walk into training camp with. And then I spent 3 years with the Cowboys.
That's crazy. What a great story.
How many years? You said
three seasons with the Cowboys.
3 seasons.
Mm-hmm. And then that was it?
And then it was, I went to New England, and then that was it.
Okay.
Yeah. Wow.
What a great story.
Yeah.
You're a great storyteller, too.
Thank you.
That was a really great story.
Yeah, you really are.
Yeah. So I remember so many things. I don't remember a lot of things.
I know.
It's probably because of this and stuff. No, just
it might
the gambling and the drugs. No,
the gambling and the drugs and the wine. And
that's truly amazing, though.
Yep.
So how did all of those experiences leading up to having this like second chance at your dream, I guess, change you and change your perspective and change how you handle things
everything,
the second time around?
Everything. I was like, oh, you won't fool me this time. I was like, no, sir. And everything changed how I approached. I understood the business more. I understood opportunities more. The things that I wasn't willing to do the first time around because I thought I didn't have to do it, I was doing it. And I want to say the thing that I really looked into a lot was helping other people.
I was just about to ask you, do you feel like the NFL, because I feel like, you know, in baseball, they have these seminars and guys and, you know, trying to warn.
But it wasn't even the seminars. It's like, I just got a phone call. Another one of my teammates, Philip Tanner, who played for the Cowboys, really good friend of mine. Like, he called me the other day and wished me a happy birthday. He was just saying, like, man, like, what I'm doing today, I owe a lot to you. And so I was trying to gather as many of the young kids that I could and say,
tell them,
listen, this is not what I heard. This is what I know. And trying to, and some of the kids, you know, it's one ear and out the other, but some of it, it sticks. And you see a guy like Philip Tanner, and you see other guys like Lau Leong, who's a high school coach, and he went to Texas Tech, but like he still calls me. Right, you know Lau?
Yeah, I know him.
Right, so he's like, bro, he still calls me to this day. He's like, man, the things that you taught me back then, and that was my biggest thing. I was like, I don't want any, because you may not have another opportunity at this.
Yeah.
So I want to be able to give all the information that I can about everything. Like, and some guys gatekeep that stuff, which is, I think, is dumb. Mm-hmm. Like some of the vets. But I'm like, if he takes my job, he was better than me.
Right.
Right. That's just what it was. Cause I know what I do.
Happened regardless, one way or another.
So I want all the information that I have to be given to the people that need it the most, you know? And when I got done with the football, I was like, whoever I can help and tell, I'm like, hey, this, it does me no good now. Like we're not competing anymore.
Yeah.
But I wanted, that was the biggest thing, is wanting people to know the things that I went through that, you know, Trahan. Yeah. Like,
so what have you done since you were done playing? What have you been doing in the years since then?
So I used to work for a company called Exos. A lot of the baseball guys train up there, up in Frisco.
Yep.
And I used to do wide receiver and tight end training, pro day and combine prep. I did that for a long time. I was an athletic director for 7 years at 2 different private schools, and I worked in media. I worked Ben and Skin. Shout out! I owe so much to Ben and Skin. I love those dudes. They gave me my first shot in media. I used to play basketball with them, and I figured one day I would ask them, because that's what I wanted to do. Was a second, like, I've always wanted to do TV, you know, radio, always since I was a little kid. And I just asked Ben one day, and I was like, "Hey, I want to do." He's like, really? I was like, yeah. And I'm like, and I'll do whatever. Like, I'll start at the bottom. He was like, hell no. He goes, you have too much value to start at the bottom. I'm like, oh, okay, but what do I have to do? And Ben and Skin, they gave me my first shot every Thursday at 3:30. I had a segment. And they said, we're not paying you, but every Thursday, do not be late, because we're going to advertise this, and you're going to give us a Cowboy breakdown every single Thursday at 3:30. Mm-hmm. And I did it for an entire season. Every Thursday, 3:30, that was my call. That was my spot. And it parlayed into that spring. Gavin Spittle called me and said, hey, you know, do you want to do radio? And I said, yes. And I got the weekend shows. I was doing weekend shows. And then from there, I did the weekend shows like, you know, April, May, June. And then we got to the season. And he says, hey, what about, you're really good. What about pregame? So I started doing the pregame show for the Cowboys on the flagship station. And then the next year, per Jerry Jones' request, I moved, and no one had did it before me, had did pre and post. They always did one or the other. Mm-hmm. I did pre and post, and I did it for 7 seasons. After that, before we had our fallout there over something that wasn't my fault, just defending myself.
Yeah, tough business.
It's a tough business. It's a tough business. But and then just been, you know, still doing media, still doing working for companies like A to Z Sports and Believe. Jeff and I do Believe. Have my own podcast now, and Unfiltered with Jesse Holly. And so still work for DallasCowboys.com. So I'm outside, as the young kids say.
You got your hands in a lot of cookie jars. That's the way to go. That is the way to go. What about personal life?
Personal life is good. I have a charity, Holly's Help Hands, that I do every single year. Life is good for me. Yeah.
Dating? Maybe.
She always does this.
I always do it. Well, what if people are watching and they're like,
I always avoid these questions.
I don't know, actually.
I always keep personal life personal.
Okay. Well, I mean, they're just, we might have
Travis
some,
Kelce, huh?
You, oh, please.
that was his response.
You might, yeah. But somebody might be watching and they're like, look at this specimen and handsome young man, and maybe they
Do you need the mom game to set you up? Yes.
In the market?
I think no. I think he's good.
He doesn't want
you. You don't need the mom.
Listen, especially me. He doesn't want.
We like playing matchmaker to those who are looking.
Yeah, if you're interested, we're here to help.
I'm not hard to find.
Okay. There we have it. Got it out of him.
I'm 6'3", 230 with locks. Yeah. You've seen me coming down the aisle in Target or Walmart.
I had a feeling we could get it out of him.
I'm not saying that I'm looking.
You're not hard
if you were looking for me,
right.
I'm not hard to find.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Good to know.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm on location sometimes with Julie at Parker's. Might catch me at a ball game.
I know.
You never know.
Okay. Before we let you go, we've got to talk a little bit of Cowboys.
Sure.
Because
I ate up all y'all segments. I'm sorry.
No, I loved it. It was a great story. This is why we have our own podcast. Yeah. We don't have a format. We have a little bit of a rundown, and if it goes awry and we write in crayons, that's what we do.
she's right.
So let's talk a lot. So I grew up a Cowboys fan.
Yes.
Dad was a huge Cowboys fan. My dad raised my sister and I, which is where the sports love comes from. Always been diehard Cowboys fans. Then I covered the team for a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then I think covering the team was not a good thing for me as a fan.
Yeah, me either.
I worked there
for 1 year.
Yeah. I just covered them for Fox Sports. I was just in there. I was new to I came from a college town, so we didn't go in locker rooms. It was so awkward.
I was still mosquito bite.
I didn't purchase these.
He's asking if you got your boobs done yet.
Yes. Did you just now catch that?
No, I'm just reflecting on it. But he's wondering.
That can make a difference.
Okay, what's the boom timeline?
That can make a difference in the locker room whether or not you get the interview or not.
Right. 100%.
If you get the interview or not.
These were not purchased until post-children.
We have BB before boobs. AB after boobs. What era of life were you in?
This was BB.
Okay.
It was
tough sledding the locker room.
It was
tough sledding the locker room, I can tell you.
It was, and at that time, it was like.
AB, you get some stuff you might not want when you go in the locker room.
But I don't know. It just was like, and at that time, it was a little more loose and fast in there. Like, as far as like, you know.
Same, when I was there.
Like when you're, I mean, there would be times when, and you know how that locker room was in Valley Ranch. Mm-hmm. And you just look around and there's nowhere to look. There's mm-hmm. nowhere to turn. There's nowhere to go. Like, you're staring at your feet. And there was always this section of the locker room, and it was with the bigger boys.
Mm-hmm.
And they would wait until I would look up. And then they would wait till I looked at him and then just drop. Yes.
What they do.
And then you're like.
But yours, were you there?
Fuck.
I wasn't there then.
I'm wondering if you were there when I was there then.
But, I was there from 2009 to 2012, 11, 12.
Yeah.
Okay. I was 2007.
Oh, she's like, when I was there.
So it I just was, I don't know. I was
she's like,
so,
yeah, Jesse. No.
And
was it him?
It was definitely not Jesse. These were really large men. And you can't, like, when you're like, it's just.
I almost said something. I was like,
what are you? What are you saying? I just asked her about the boobs. So
I'm not talking
listen,
about.
She, this is all this, fair game, right?
I can make this room real dim. You're talking about. You start removing article of clothing in here.
Okay.
It will get dim in here. The lights will go down.
Okay. All right.
Sorry.
I got it. Sorry. So now it's like. It's totally, I don't know. Anyway, I was just getting used to this whole and how to handle myself and what to do. And I was like, fuck, I'm not trying to do this. I'm not trying to look.
No, it was so awkward.
So awkward. But he would do it intentionally. I don't even know who it was. And I don't even know if it was the same guy every time. Like, I just was trying not to make eye contact with people and just look at my shoes.
If you look the wrong way for a second and someone sees you, then you're a bird watcher.
Remember the
bird watcher? They'd be like, oh, she's bird watcher or whatever. I'm like,
no, to your defense, it really is impossible.
Yeah.
Like, because the way that the locker room was, it was like a U shape, right?
Yes.
You walked in through these curtains and it was a U shape. So when everybody
So
when you walked in, if you look to the right, there are guys. You look straight ahead, there are guys. You look catty corner to the left, there's guys.
They're
so it was like it was nowhere she
could surrounded.
Then, yeah. Like, and then once you get into the center of it, like literally you can do a 360 and there's lockers all the way around.
Yeah.
So you just, and it could be guys just getting undressed or guys coming back in from the shower, preparing for the shower. Like, so it was a constant rotation.
And most of it is completely harmless and no one's trying to do anything. But there was an element of this particular section of humans that wanted to F with me, like in my head, literally. I mean, this was BB, so it's
probably. Did anyone slide you their number?
No, I don't think so.
Definitely.
You did.
Definitely post.
Somebody, I know somebody did. You, I remember.
Yeah.
What year?
Cowboys. I was only there for 1 year, but I worked for the team. I was the team reporter, so I was in the locker room every day. It was 2007. That season, 13-3.
Yeah, well, they should have won it all.
Yeah, they should have won it all.
I don't think I did have any. No.
Yeah.
But I didn't cover Mono. Like, it was, I mean, I would go out there maybe like once a week or something.
Or else
to Valley Ranch.
Look at her trying to defend why no one slid her their number.
You're such a bitch.
She's like, but if I was there more.
If I was there daily, oh, they would have been all over me.
It's not what I was. No, that was BB. No. Listen.
No, yeah.
You're an asshole for doing that to me. That's not what I meant.
No, I'm just teasing.
Yeah, no. Anyway, so bad idea to bring up that whole thing.
No, that was some really great stuff we just had there.
You're like blushing everything.
No,
all of it.
You're like getting ready.
All of it was really good.
Because, you know why? Because the worst thing to me that I ever want to be perceived as is arrogant or conceited. Like, that's, makes me want to vomit. So that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Is that I did not think that if I would have been out there all the time.
No. I'm just giving
someone
you shit.
Would have hit
hey,
on me.
Y'all made fun of my crown. I can.
Right. So anyway, that's all I'm saying is I don't believe any of those
crap.
Large men wanted to slip me their numbers.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. So. It was definitely an experience.
It was an experience. My whole point where I started on this whole damn story
was
to talk Cowboys and the fact that those years just kind of changed my perception of things. And then the team was really shitty. And so it was like, not really shitty. I just got turned off. And then Dak came and I fell back in love with this team.
Gotcha.
When Dak got here. I don't know what it is about him. I love his leadership. I love his I just love all the things. I don't know him from Adam. I've interviewed
it's
him once.
He's a big black man.
He's a big black man. I think, and it has nothing to do with the fact that I think he's handsome. I do. I'm on record as saying so. But I like his leadership style. Yeah. I feel like he's a good human. I feel like he really tries to do the right thing. Not that Tony Romo didn't or anything like that. I don't know. I just, there's something about Dak and even like CD. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know. I just have liked this team a lot the last couple of years. And I find myself being more invested in them. Now, with all of that being said, in the most roundabout way of getting to this, how about them Cowboys?
The NFC East Cowboys, the NFC East champions.
Oh,
yeah, division champs.
Yes, division champions.
No, I mean, this is a good bunch. You know, finally Mike McCarthy has taken over the play calling, and I wanted that at the time that he came in 2018 to bring him in to do that. But he's finally taken over play calling, and I think they found a rhythm. After those first couple of weeks where things got a little bit shaky, they found a rhythm, and Dak and CD and others kind of really came into form. And, you know, there's been other times, 2007, when they were 13-3, they had the number one overall seed. That's an easy path to the championship. And then I think again in like 2016, they had the number one overall seed in the NFC. Outside of those two opportunities, and both of those opportunities, we thought that it was going to be a good run.
Yeah.
They're in prime position right now to make a run, at least to the NFC Championship. Now, when they get to the NFC Championship, if everything goes according to kind of just, you know, football is a funny lady, but if it just goes according to plan, they'll play the Niners in the NFC Championship game.
Yeah.
Now I've been on record in saying there's no better team in the NFC. I thought in all football until Baltimore manhandled them, but I still think there isn't a better football team in the NFC than the Niners. And the Niners have the Cowboys number. They have for the last couple of years. So, you know, it starts.
And this season.
And it starts this weekend against Green Bay, who, of course, prior to was Aaron Rodgers led. And that always was an issue. It was a boogeyman. He's not there anymore. So let's exercise that demon and get over the Packers and then get this thing rolling and get to the NFC Championship game. And then we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. Maybe the Rams can knock them off, the Niners off them. If something happens, maybe, I don't know. But they haven't had an opportunity like this in a long time.
What do you make of the fact that this team has been so good at home and not as near as good on the road? Is it just the quality of opponent they've had on the road?
I don't know.
Because that seems to make some sense.
I don't know.
At least they had the good win at Washington, right? Like, just it's not a great team, but you're winning on the road.
Yeah.
At least you can shut some people up a little bit.
Man, they don't know. They've been on record of saying, man, we've talked about it.
Yeah.
We've had come to Jesus moments and saying, what is happening to us when we go on the road? They don't have the answer.
Well, it was like the Rangers in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Like, why can't we win at home?
At home.
We win every game on the road. We can't win at home.
So,
and you can't figure it out.
But the good thing is they put themselves in a position to where you can have two home games leading up to the NFC Championship game. But I don't know. I don't know. Like, I still to this day watching a ton of film, trying to figure it out, because you're like, you know, you lose to Arizona and weird things happen to the Cowboys in Arizona. But it's like, still other teams, you're like, you're better than these teams. But why are these things not happening here? Same players, same playbook. It's just not happening when they get on the plane. It's like something happens at TSA. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's like there's
sometimes
a swap.
It's just a mental block.
It
like,
is.
But isn't it weird too, though, when you're like, okay, weird things happen against Green Bay. Well, none of these players are the same players that had weird things happen against Green Bay too. Like it's, but it's like, I don't know. It's weird, and it permeates throughout sports. Yeah.
It's a mental thing.
For sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, this was so much fun. Thanks so much for being with us. Sorry for inappropriateness.
No, I thought we were gonna get inappropriate way earlier than that. We held off. We held off as long as we could.
We did. We got there in the end.
We got there in the end. Okay. Well, Jesse,
that was too fun. We'll have to have you back sometime.
Oh, for sure.
We could do like a whole regular show with you just kind of sitting in with us or whatever. Now that we've all gotten to know you and love you, and people will want to hear more from you, I'm sure. And hopefully you'll be on the freak too.
The MILFs.
Hey, and good. Hey! Now who's inappropriate? Look at Julie. She's so excited.
I just love that he can't believe he just said it.
Best moment in show history, I think. I really think it is.
He just has to sit there and own it. He doesn't know how to follow that.
I mean, like, he was going through, like shot, like, what can I do to one-up
and so he,
how inappropriate
right,
Emily's been.
He went
been.
With calling us both MILFs.
I love it. God, it's amazing. Okay, Jesse, we end every show by looking into our respective cameras. Yours is in the middle. Oh, no, yours is up middle. Here.
Gotcha.
We throw up the peace signs because it's super cheesy and we're super cheesy, and we say mom game out.
Mom gang?
Mom game out.
Oh, mom game out. I got you.
All right.
Yeah.
On that kind of, or should we say MILF game out?
Oh, MILF game out. I love that.
Let's do it.
Let's do that.
Okay.
Let's change it.
No, I don't want to say I'm a MILF. That sounds
don't
weird.
Don't worry about it. Let's just sign off. Ready?
Now let me ask you a question. Do you think you're a MILF?
It depends on who you ask.
I mean, at this point in time, though, y'all can kind of just say, like, the whole group of mom gamers that are moms
or
MILFs.
We didn't
know. I just am thinking about how I had my son. Remember how I had my son subscribe to our YouTube channel? He's 12 and he can't.
Let's just change the name of the dang show to the Milf King.
Come on.
Julie is really embracing
this. Come on.
She is really embracing this. Okay, we've got
that shot of confidence today.
Let's go. Okay. All right. Look in your camera. Look in your camera. And Mom Game out on three. One, two, three.
Milf Game out.
Mom knew it was coming.
The Mom Game is proud to partner with local GEICO offices, Victoria Elliott, proudly serving your local community.